Yo, hey, we are back
with another episode of Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. What up, guys? Good morning, good evening, good night. Thank you for being with me. So, I was gone last week. I don't know if you missed me. Did you miss me? Yeah. So, I was busy editing and I had some other stuff going on, but I am back. We are here. We are continuing with God Bless the Girls. We'll get a couple chapters in for you guys today, 31, 32, and 33. Last week, or the week before that, actually, you know what happened. Sarah, our main character, broke out of her captor's house and she's running in the forest. And in the beginning, she is almost being caught by her captor. And but finds a way to make it to some train tracks. And when she gets there, all her training kicks back in and she is leaving gore in the dust. But in that, you know, being dazed and confused and, you know, not having food and water and tired and all that other stuff, she runs in the wrong direction and she runs basically back towards the house that she escaped from, coincidentally running into Lanky and the big-breasted lady. Long story short, Gore is still chasing her. And when she realizes who Lanky and Gore is, it's too late because they plunge her with a syringe that is drugging her. And she runs into the forest and the drug is starting to take effect. And she's seeing pink elephants and blue bears. And by the time she gets to the pond where she suckles on a little bit of water before she goes out for good, she thinks she sees Mark. Could be Gore, could be Mark, who knows, but yeah. So that's where we left off, excuse me. And we're just going to pick up right there and see how it goes. So without further ado, I bring to you another episode of God Bless the Girls, chapters 31, 32, and 33. And as you know, so far on here, everything on this podcast, Dialogue Heavy, has been written and recited by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So with that out of the way, let's do this. God bless the girls. Here we go. I was told that I woke up dazed and confused a few hours later in the hospital, kicking and screaming. And my surgeon, Dr. Hopist, decided, or rather put me back to sleep after I armbarred a male nurse ripping his shoulder out of the socket. I was actually only in the hospital for 2 days and three nights, but I didn't even know how good I had it. I was busy complaining about the food and how much my family hovered over me, but was yet to realize the onslaught of what was waiting for me on the outside. It wasn't until I'd given the police department every detail I could remember and been discharged that the enormity of the situation actually hit me. See, our family house sits at the end of a cul-de-sac in a usually very quiet neighborhood, but the day I returned home, media outlets from near and far came to get the scoop on the story, and it took us 15 minutes just to get from the end of our block to the driveway. It ultimately came down to my mother finally having enough of everyone's bullshit and punching a news anchor in the face, breaking her nose on our front lawn, that the television trucks and nosy neighbors finally got the message about our family needing privacy. Even still, even my mom's right hook from hell couldn't stop good old Mark from coming to see me. When Mark sat down at the foot of my bed that morning, just by the way that he looked at me, I knew that he truly loved me. And it wasn't the high school puppy love or testosterone-filled lust that the boys from school had either. That was some adult shit. Unmitigated, unconditional, I don't have to like you every day, but I will always love you type of love. Unfortunately, a requirement when it comes to me. It's my fault. I should have never left you, Mark said with grief-filled tears. I'm so sorry that happened. It's okay, Mark. I pissed you off. And besides, how were you supposed to know a family of rapists and serial killers were plotting outside to take me away forever? Mark looked at me through watery eyes and tried to shake off my poor attempt to make him laugh. But still, Sarah, if I wouldn't have... What, Mark? If you wouldn't have left, I wouldn't have been taken? Well, yeah. Okay. But if you didn't leave me, I also wouldn't have been able to save Terry, Susie, and Boston. With the stabbing pain in my ribs from a log I had landed on during my forest run, I sat up and wiped Mark's tears away. I'm fine. Really? Okay. All right, Mark said, as he gave me a massive hug. Then something weird happened. I don't know if it was the love that he showed for me in his pursuit to find me, my trauma from the abduction as a whole, or a combination of the two, but all of a sudden I had butterflies in my stomach. Mark was sweet that day. We watched old Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reruns and ate my favorite meal, chili dogs with strawberry Fanta, and before long, it was like nothing ever happened. But I can tell, it was Eden that Mark to tell me all the juicy gossip and details of the last couple of weeks, and when he finally told me all that he knew, I really wish I hadn't heard it. Chapter 32. It turned out I had been missing for 15 days. And while I was gone, the whole town was looking for me. My parents were a wreck, and Mark was of suspicion since he was the last one anybody saw me with. He couldn't leave his house without being terrorized by the local news station, the cops, or people from school. And even then, he wasn't safe receiving death threats via text message from known and unknown numbers alike. His family was affected too. Mr. Dan, Mark's father, decided to save face and step down from his position as deputy chief by day 10 after being ridiculed by the entire city of Galveston. The address that the girls and I were abducted and taken to was at 356 Christmas Way, which I thought was funny because there was nothing merry about that place. And it was in Susanna, Texas, the next town over, just a mere 7 miles away from my doorstep. My captor, Gore, was really named Jerry Jacobson II, and he took more than his father's name. Like I guessed it, they were a family, albeit a very sick one. The family had been abducting girls on Gore's wrestling route and bringing them back to the various homes they owned and operated in Texas. But the long and arduous journey of their sadistic ways started long before I came into the picture and fucked everything up. The big-breasted lady was named Teresa, the mother, and she was the sickest of them all. Apparently, her desire to have a daughter turned into some weird, sick fascination with little girls and later women that would turn deadly for all involved. Her first abduction came not too long after she was told she couldn't bear any more children, and because of her history of being bipolar, no agency would allow her and her husband to adopt. Jerry Sr., the father, hadn't yet realized how bad the news had actually impacted his wife. He thought her wanting to stay longer at the kids' parties that little Gore was invited to as a child was the extent of her discontent. But one day, during a neighborhood block party, Jerry went in search of his wife and found Teresa in a friend's backyard in a life-size dollhouse with a 4-year-old girl that she'd gagged and bound. He knew then that he had a real problem on his hands. But since negotiations was Jerry's business, the easy part was to convince Teresa to let the little girl go. The hard part was to get little Nina to forget what Teresa had done to her. So Jerry wiped her eyes clean and played a clever game with the child, allowing her to tie him up. And luckily, they left that situation unscathed. But soon, Teresa would do things that would make it a lot harder for Jerry to clean up. Jerry Jacobson I was a shark in his career as a real estate developer with the highest success rate in Texas at closing deals. And he actually knew Mark's mom. More on that later. But in the home, he was a pushover. There was nothing Jerry wouldn't do for his beloved Teresa, and he always tortured himself for not giving her the daughter that she'd always wanted. Once Teresa started taking girls against their will, Jerry's already really bad drinking habits got worse from the pressure. And the next thing he knew, he found himself participating in the madness. But Teresa was messy and reckless, so in an effort to not spend the rest of their disgusting lives in jails, it was his plan to take the girls from different parts of the country during Gore's wrestling competitions instead of in their hometown and put them in different homes they owned around the city they lived in. Now, if normal is a word that can be used in all of this, Jerry II was probably the most quote-unquote normal one in the bunch. Gore, a nickname his first ever coach gave him for his ability to plow through his opponents, was a natural on the wrestling mat, and had been winning state championships since he was 6, and soon everyone in the community knew his name. He blew through his competition so badly, pinning his opponents in minutes, sometimes seconds, that parents showed up to the competition with their little boys and would see their precious child's names on the competitors list next to Gore's, and they would either try to find some kind of minor infraction that would force Gore out of the competition, or they'd just outright forfeit. He was that good. Off the wrestling mats, though, Gore was awkward and not very social. He didn't have a lot of friends, and he was terrified of girls, so he focused all his attention on wrestling and trying to please the only people he thought loved him. Unfortunately for him, his parents loved him about as far as they can throw him, but they did find him useful in other ways. Chapter 33. Somewhere deep down inside, Gore always knew something was wrong. He knew what he and his family was doing just wasn't right, but he did what he was told. At least that's what he told the Galveston Police Department the day that they captured him, that they arrested him. He told the cops everything in that interrogation room. Who knows if everything was true, but the facts that he'd said was so incriminating that nobody who thought they were ever going to see the light of day again would ever have given up the stories that he did. He told the cops that he was never there when his parents did what they did to the girls. He said he would play loud music in the garage and work out profusely to drown out the noise. And when they were done, he would bring the girls back to their cages. He said he was made to be a groundskeeper of sorts. And when he wasn't practicing or studying, it was his job to go around to the different houses and make sure the girls were fed and to clean up the messes left for him by his parents. And that's when things got even darker. I heard one of the investigators puked in the room when Gore told him his different methods in which to dispose of the bodies. He said that he had read many books on serial killers, rapists, and stalkers, and adopted their methods, mostly burying the girls. He tried to burn one once, but it got too messy, and the smell of burning flesh, unless you drove out into the middle of the desert, would raise suspicion. For a while, he would take the long drive to the Gulf of Mexico, rent a boat, then gut the victims and let them sink. He told the detective how he would get into the water with the body and cut it open at the belly and take out the organs that contained air and body acids. After that, the body would go under in time and the water life below would handle the rest. But that was time consuming, not to mention expensive. And soon, as Teresa's thirst became more frequent and the bodies piled up, he'd have to find a faster, more efficient way to dispose of his mother's secrets. Their live-in home, along with the others they owned, were basically cemeteries to their victims. Gore hadn't gotten to yet. And by the time the cops and excavation crew were finished digging, they recovered 72 bodies, and that's the ones above sea level. There were 3 additional bodies in the bed of the Jacobson family truck hidden under a construction tarp on the day Mark and the cops found me. Susie, Terry, and Boston. Teresa and Jerry panicked when I escaped and felt they needed to kill the whole litter of girls in the house to avoid getting caught. Lucky for the girls, though, Gore was always the executioner, and with him chasing me through the woods like Little Red Riding Hood, Teresa and Jerry just drugged him with the same syringe they got me with and dumped him in the bed of the truck along with some shovels and other tools. Their plan was to catch up with me, have Gore kill the four of us, then bury us into the forest floor. And boom. That's it, guys. That's all I got for today. Chapters 31, 32, and 33 of God Bless the Girls. Hope you liked it. I don't feel like I have the dramatic ending that I really wanted, but that's all I have in the course of editing. 34 is a little... I'm not ready to display that yet. I'll work on that throughout the week and stuff like that. But I'm glad you're listening, man. And we are back. And I'm going to try to get back to doing it weekly, of course. Crazy chapter, you know. It's a lot of explaining of the situations. You get to really see how sick it is. You get to see the genesis of... the genesis of the situation and how this family just got to how bad they got. And it's a tough ball game, man. It's a tough ball game and pretty tough to hear. It's a book and it's entertainment and stuff like that. So it's, you know, and luckily all of this is very fiction. Obviously these type of things have happened in real life, but I'm glad to say that all of this is fiction. It's all just coming off the top of my head. I personally, myself, have read a lot of those books and seen a lot of those shows and movies like Snapped and stuff like that. So that's kind of where all this stuff kind of, you know, coagulates into my head and makes a, you know, who knows where creativity comes from. But yeah, that's what it is. So anyway, I'm glad that you guys listened to this episode of Dialogue Heavy in particular. God bless the girls. I definitely have to read through a lot more before I record, because as you can tell, I'm pretty, never been that good at reading out loud, but as you can tell, I'm, what do you call it? Rusty from missing last week, but we shall get better. And believe it or not, this is take two. But anyway, not gonna waste too much more of your time. Thank you again for listening. You guys know where you can get a hold of me, at Michael Degree on Instagram, or on my email, mzzack199@gmail.com. I thank you. I love you. I appreciate you. And we'll catch you next week. See you later. I'm out of here. Peace.